Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Judy Dempsey, the Editor-in-Chief of Strategic Europe from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Strategic Europe are the thoughts of Judy's wide-ranging and very, very rich colleagues of opinion throughout the European Union. And we begin with a general understanding that the European Union now has a new name and a new resume to consider for its continuing partnership, alliance, and disputation with the United States of America. The decision by President Biden to step aside from his own campaign and endorse his Vice President Kamala Harris of California means that Europe now must consider what's in it for us. A good question. I like what's in it for us for the European Union. So I asked Judy to speculate a little bit about the process ahead of us. Judy, a very good evening to you. The analogy I came to immediately was in the summer of 2008 during the contest between John McCain of Arizona and Barack Obama of Illinois. There was a moment that Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, vouchsafed a visit by Barack Obama to address a very large and happy audience in the summertime of Berlin, is my memory. There was free beer served, and everybody was in a good mood. Barack Obama made a speech about international affairs to demonstrate his ability to move from a regional senator, a new regional senator from Illinois, to being a man of international peace. Angela Merkel greeted him, and I don't recall anything more about the detail other than the fact that it was part of the campaign's success to show that John McCain wasn't the only man with foreign policy experience. Do you expect something like that is needed again with Kamala Harris, or has Europe already learned enough? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show. Actually, I'm glad you brought up this visit of Barack Obama to Berlin, because Merkel was not at all happy with it. She didn't get on with Obama in his first years. And I think she was a little bit put off by his charisma and his the way he appealed to the crowds and everything. And she didn't want to be associated with his campaign. But as we know, they got on extremely well over the years. For Kamala Harris, she is, let's put it like this, she is known in Europe, but only as the vice president who really didn't do much, even in terms of the migration issue with Mexico. But she's now known because there's a sense of relief that Biden is handing over the baton for the moment, unless there's any big changes at the Democratic convention, to Harris. And gosh, the Europeans are going to be on a fantastically quick learning curve. And already the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has greeted her and welcomed her and praised her. So this is more relief of the Europeans, not that it's going to make a difference to the European strategic outlook.
Yes, I want to press on that point, though. The Biden administration, and what we know very little so far, Ms. Harris is going to make a series of speeches over the next 100 and so days. What we know so far is that Ms. Harris has endorsed the policies of the Biden administration domestically and foreign. Is that a uniform popular opinion, the way Mr. Biden has greeted the alliance of the EU?
Oh, yes. I think there'll be a huge relief on this if she wins. But the fact that she's endorsed what we're talking about actually is the NATO military alliance. It's Europe. It's Ukraine. Let's leave out the Middle East because it's so controversial, even in the United States, not to mention Europe. But she is seen as a lady of continuity rather than making radical breaks. And this is why the Europeans were so so afraid of Donald Trump re-entering the White House, because this time round he's absolutely prepared on all sorts of issues, whether it's economic, whether it's social, whether it's abortion issues, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Russia, whether it's China, you name it. So this time round, the Europeans are actually hoping that Harris has enough time to galvanize her campaign and make a huge difference and dent the support for Trump.
Yes, I want to separate NATO from EU, however, because EU is a organization of prosperity, 27 nations, with social policies that, surprisingly, Judy, when I was reviewing the social policies that I know of in the EU, they're very close and not far-fetched from what we call progressive policies that are practiced by California, which is Ms. Harris's origins. In even the San Francisco Bay Area of California, progressive as far as San Francisco, California is concerned. And that strikes me as it's suited and welcome in Europe. Is that, I'm generalizing because I don't have all the policies lined up, but Europe is a social safety net combination of states where the welfare of the citizens is a priority. Does that match your understanding, progressive California and progressive EU?
Well, I think there's a huge difference between progressive California and how you define California, given what's happening in San Francisco and the lack of housing and the hugely expensive housing and what Silicon Valley has done to pushing up prices right across the board. But Europe categorizes as a social net. Yes, it is there. But I think the thing is, Europe is no longer coherent on several issues, on immigration and particularly on climate change. And California is really supportive of introducing strong measures to combat climate degradation. And that will be welcomed by most European Union countries. So there'll be a kind of identity there with what Ms. Harris is proposing. But at the moment, this hasn't fed into the outlook in Europe, but certainly on the climate issue and what the elites or the well-connected, educated know about California, this will be welcomed.
Now, NATO, Ukraine, I have no writ for Ms. Harris's policy on Ukraine other than to say she supports the Biden administration's policies, which are well-known and continuing. And I'm presuming that is welcomed by the NATO nations with the caveat that the war is unclear. The road ahead is unclear. This will be the third year of Europe without adequate energy, especially Germany, to return to full prosperity. So it's an unknown. We'll just put Ms. Paris. Well, you reminded me she attended the Munich Security Conference. Was she well greeted there?
One thing, there is no energy shortage in Europe. That's over. The energy dependence on Russia is over. The storage facilities are absolutely full. There's plenty of liquefied natural gas. Renewable energies are on the increase. The energy issue is off the agenda now. And this is actually very good news. It's one of the few things that good things that came out of Russia's appalling invasion of Ukraine. But I just wonder about Harris and Ukraine. Of course, she would be advised by the State Department and the Pentagon on how she sees Ukraine and the progress of the war. But I think there's something quite fundamental here, the difference between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And it's a generational issue. Biden was an intrinsic Atlanticist by his age, by his experience, by all the, on the foreign affairs committees of the in Congress or the House of Representatives. It was in his it's in his DNA, an Atlanticist through and through. And given his and Harris is much younger. She comes from a completely different background. She has no experience of what Europe came from after 1945. What this has become. How the US built the multilateral institutions, spurred on by the United States, encouraged by them. So we have an immense generational difference here, and it may actually influence of view of Europe. It's not a bad thing, actually, because Europe really has to grow up and wean itself off this dependence on the U.S. security umbrella.
And Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump is very out in the open of his policies with regard tariffs, with regard trade, with regard made in America, make America great again. And he represents the conservative Republican Party, the conservative part of the Republican Party, with caveats. However, I note that since the first Trump administration and this new prospect of a second Trump administration, there's been a considerable success for parties, small parties yet, but vividly small parties, of right of center of in Europe. So can we say that Mr. Trump will be greeted with the same hesitation and unhappiness that of the first term, or are there going to be welcoming voices in Europe, presuming he's successful?
If Trump is successful, there'll be a few welcoming voices, particularly from the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, who actually visited Trump in Florida last week when he was in the United States. But there's going to be serious trepidation because this Trump too is absolutely prepared. And there's a coherent campaign, a coherent agenda over trade, over the economy, over NATO, over the European Union, over deregulation, and particularly over Russia. This is the man who says, I could do a deal with Russia, and as soon as I'm in office, I can fix it. Then J.D. Vance, his running mate, says, Ukraine doesn't matter. I mean, these are warning signals, and the Trump administration is prepared for a new America, a new and different America who has a completely different perspective of NATO and of the European Union and of Russia and of the Middle East.
I want to be specific then about Germany. It is said that Mr. Scholz is not a strong leader. It is said that the coalition has inconsistencies that can be resolved only by the electorate. Is Germany in any fashion preparing for either or now, or is it too early? Is it preparing for a second Trump term? And what would we look to? I'm thinking of alternative for Deutschland. Is that something that can gain credibility, presuming Mr. Trump is successful?
Well, there are state elections coming up in the eastern states of Germany, and the alternative for Deutschland, the alternative for Germany, is doing very well. They're running high in the polls, 16 or 17%. But I think we have to be quite careful. Foreign policy rarely plays a huge issue in state elections and in federal elections here in Germany. What is going to play a role is leadership and immigration and the economy. And on the three counts, Olaf Scholz, the Chancellor of Germany, has performed incredibly badly, particularly on the leadership. And he's created such a vacuum in his three-way coalition that the alternative for Deutschland isn't even centre-right, it's far-right. I have to be quite careful to say, can you say this on air, but kind of neo-Nazi sympathies. But it's a seriously far-right-wing party, but it has a certain traction with parts of the population. And somehow Olaf Scholz is not standing up to explain what has to be done in terms of Germany's relationship with the European Union and NATO. To be fair to Scholz, he has changed in terms of the economic, political and financial and indeed military support for Ukraine, which really doesn't go down well with the far right here in Germany.
And the Christian Democrats, I'm told, I read only what I read in the Financial Times, so the limits of my understanding. The Christian Democrats are polling very well and could rule with a coalition that included the alternative for Deutschland. Is that accurate?
No. This is completely no-go territory. I thought you were going to say they would consider a coalition with the Greens, but if the Christian Democrats under Mr. Merz were to even contemplate having a coalition with the Alternative for Deutschland, this would be the end of conservatism, post-war conservatism in Germany, and it would be an incredibly dangerous direction for that party to go. No, this is no go.
And the Greens then, that was my second choice because the Greens have been enormously supportive of Ukraine. Well, is that tell us that the Christian Democrats would also continue support of Ukraine?
Yes. The Christian Democrats have a quite nice group of super foreign policy experts who understand why Ukraine is necessary for European security, why it's necessary that they should try to win or at least negotiate from a position of strength. And they are very tough on Russia. It's very interesting, the collection of foreign policy experts in the Christian Democratic Union Party. So that would certainly continue. But pandering to the far right or the far left, it's simply off the cards.
Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, commenting what we know so far about Europe looking at the changed landscape of the American election of 2024. When we come back, Judy posts every year at summertime when it's ready for holiday, a list of summertime pleasures of her many colleagues. I've learned a deal from these, and when we come back, we'll comment on some of them. You know, your TV, your fiction, your guilty pleasure. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.